I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Current Geek, the talk show about items of interest to you and the geeks of the world. I'm reading this wrong. Items of interest to the geeks of the world and you. That's what I meant to say. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. Hello, Tom Merritt.
Hello, Scott Johnson, and thank you for completing my Tuesday. My Tuesday is now complete because I get to do Current Geek with you.
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't realize that this represented the completion of anything for you, but I'm glad. So what do you do from now on? What's the rest of your Tuesday look like? Just chilling?
Probably pie.
All right. Cherry, because that's your favorite.
Yeah, maybe boysenberry is pretty good too, though.
Yeah. I could go with a berry pie anytime.
Some kind of berry cherry. Yeah.
Oh, Berry Cherry. He was the best jazz musician of his time.
Good old Berry Cherry.
He was so
Mississippi
good.
Blues man.
Yeah. We've forgotten how great he is. I was going to say that I am hopped up on two substances, cold medication and a little bit of caffeine. So I may come off as a little bit weird today. I just want to apologize flatly and blanketly up front for anything really stupid I might say. But also, I'm not worried because Tom will bring the gravitas and seriousness that we need to recover from such a thing.
This reminds me, and I forgot to tell you before the show, I put a new segment idea in here that we will try out.
Okay.
Perfect day when you're hopped up on cold medicine.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm all in on your plan. Also, that's the new microphone, isn't it? It's longer than usual.
Oh, you noticed.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Look at that. It looks like two or three PR-40s jammed together. What is that?
This is an Electro Voice RE20.
Ooh,
I'm trying it out.
Fancy. It's got a nice, deep, velvety tone to it.
Why, thank you, Scott.
All right, well, chat room's like, oh, boy. All right, yeah, I'm not going to say anything more about his big, phallic microphone, and we're going to instead do
and
this.
And my long, velvety nothing.
We'll do this instead. Oh, whoops, Scott. See, already. It's already paying off. Here we go.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Well, Tom, let's talk about the news things that are happening, please.
The remake of the 1988 movie Chucky is coming later this year, and they have announced that Mark Hamill will be the voice of the doll Chucky. Child's Play comes out June 21st, 2019, and stars Aubrey Plaza, Gabriel Bateman, and Brian Tyree Henry, as well as Mark Hamill.
Are the two bottom names there that you mentioned, are they names I should be familiar with? Are they from something
yes.
I should know? Tell me what.
They are. Gabriel Bateman is best known for appearing in Child's Play later this year.
Okay.
No, Gabriel Bateman's a kid. He's a child actor.
Is he one of the Bateman's kids?
He plays the child in this. You know who Aubrey Plaza is, right?
I do know her, yeah. I'd be excited. Parks and Recreation, she was great on... that Marvel thing that's on FX, whose name
Legion,
I always forget.
Yeah.
Legion, yeah. Legion season 1 and 2. And here it is. Oh, chat room saying, oh, okay, no, they're not. Let's see. Gabriel Bateman, American child actor, known for his role. Blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to see if he's related to any of the Bateman, famous Batemans. I don't know why that matters to me. Anyway.
Brian Tyree Henry is Jefferson Davis in Into the Spider-Verse, in case you saw that.
Okay, I'm trying to remember. Jefferson Davis?
He's also a Paperboy in Atlanta.
Okay.
Paperboy.
Got it. Nailed it.
Gotta make that paper.
Okay, it looks like they're not related to Justin or Justine or any of my 80s idols.
Oh, the Gabriel Bateman.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's exciting, I guess. I mean, it's a reboot, sort of, and Netflix is a great place to try out your weird idea. And Chucky was always a very campy, fun time. They had what is a little bit surprising about the news about Mark Hamill playing the voice of the doll. Up until this point, every Chucky has been played by the same actor for years and years and years. And I want to say that is the same guy who played Cotton Hill on the show King of the Hill, Hank Hill's father in that show. And let's see, I think it's the same guy. Let me just double check. But I wonder why they didn't use him. And it's fine. I really like... Oh, no, you know what it was. It's Brad Dourif. Never mind. Forget everything I said. It's the medicine.
Oh, the doc from Deadwood.
Yeah, that's the guy who used to do Chucky, and he always did
and
Chucky.
He was also in the movie we watched for Kerenking Film Festival recently with Jack Nicholson.
Yes.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, exactly. And he was, I don't know why they're not just using him also, but hey, Mark Hamill's
where
cool.
Where did you come up with Netflix, by the way?
I don't know.
This movie's going into the theaters.
I don't know. It just came out of me. Why?
He said Netflix is a great place to experiment, which is true.
But isn't there
this movie isn't going to be on Netflix, as far as I know, but
hold on. I know I'm not crazy. There's a Netflix Chucky movie that's not connected to this, and it's called
Perhaps. This is in theaters June 21st.
Cult of Chucky on Netflix. I knew I was right.
But
that's just not this movie. All right.
Okay.
I'm good now.
Also, and if anybody out there is like, wait, Luke Skywalker is the voice of Chucky? I don't get it. You don't know Mark Hamill voicing the Joker. If you know Mark Hamill voicing the Joker or even his appearance on the Flash television series, that's the Mark Hamill voice that's going to be voicing Chucky.
Yeah, this is his VO acumen, which is high. Yeah, he's great as a voice actor.
Most people know about that, but there may be a few who don't realize.
Yeah, he got all excited on Twitter and I was glad to hear about it. So I will probably... I don't know, I might see it. I like horror reboots. Sure. That's fine.
Let's talk about plastic Garfield telephones, as one does sometimes. Especially if one lives on the shores of Brittany in northern France for the past 35 years, where plastic Garfield telephones have just been washing up on the beach for decades now. A local anti-litter group finally found the source of the phones. Nobody knew where they were coming from. They just kept on washing up from time to time. A lost shipping container fell off of a boat in 1983 and lodged in a cave. That cave is only visible at low tide. And the anti-litter group found it by talking to a local farmer who had actually discovered it when he was a teenager back in 1983. But the container is buried beneath cave, making it difficult and costly to extricate.
So is it just corrosion and slow? We talked about this on TMS briefly, but we weren't totally sure on the details, but the corrosion just slowly opening that thing up and then outfloat parts to these things.
Yeah, one would expect. So it seems like probably the first wave of Garfields in 1983 were just ones that kind of busted out, would be my guess.
Right.
Like the container probably broke as it was being tossed about. Then it lodged in this cave. And probably had a hole in it, you know, and like you say, over time, corrosion probably opens that hole, and wind and waves just sort of mess around and carry these things out slowly, onto the beach.
Yeah. I think it's, part of me is a little sad that there's not a more outlandish reason why this was happening. Cause the idea of 35 straight years, three decades and five additional years of these things just washing up on shore with no explanation is kind of more fun than finding out that it's just something as mundane as, whoops, in the 80s, at the height of Garfield's popularity and, merchandise, one of these things fell off a container boat and got itself jammed up in a cave and has been slowly oozing this stuff over time. That's just not as exciting as the mystery itself.
Was it your assumption, or wouldn't your assumption have been that this is kind of probably what it was? Like, oh, there's probably a shipping container full of these things stuck somewhere.
I kind of
we
agree.
Just don't know where it is. That the fun part is, like, where is it? Yeah. How is it doing this?
But I agree with that.
Finding it stuck in a cave that you can't even get to, I feel like it's a pretty satisfactory explanation, because it was a hidden cave. It's unobtainable. You can't even get to it. It would be it cost a lot of money to try to remove it. So the Garfields will just keep flowing.
To me, I had more of a E.T. Atari cartridge kind of conspiracy in my head, where
like somebody was seeding these?
Yeah, or some factory in Taiwan who made all these back then just overdid it. They overordered. Everyone lost interest in Garfield. He sold out. Garfield's so yesterday. Now it's all about, I don't know, a million other comics we care about. So no more Garfield. And then these guys just slowly throw a couple in the lake. Just let them go. Go out there another couple days.
That doesn't make any sense. First of all, it's not a lake. It's the ocean.
The ocean, I mean. I mean, the ocean
so
really.
Somebody was like, I know how to get rid of these. I'll spend 40 years slowly throwing them away a couple at a time.
I assume it's multiple generations. They pass the secret down.
Right, right. It's a whole society, secret society. Yeah. You must be inducted into its mysteries.
And, you know, I'm hoping like, wow, in 2019 they could like get aerial footage with like night vision and catch these guys throwing phones in the ocean and. No, it's not that. It's a much more mundane
I think
thing.
You know what? I mean, maybe it's because I live in Los Angeles. I think you got a script idea there.
Yeah, it's not bad, right?
Start chopping that around.
A lot of my bad ideas could be movies, I've learned over time. But
believe me, so many have become movies that shouldn't stop.
If I were the people in France, I'd put these on eBay or something and sell them and say, these are part of the Garfield phones that washed up on the thing.
Ocean washed, naturally recovered Garfield phone.
I would love one. It's a great story. To tell
no
people.
Longer polluting our oceans. It has now been recovered, and you can own it to raise awareness about anti-litter.
Exactly. And then cue the music from Sarah McLachlan, and we could all be holding these phones, and they'd be all corroded.
The price of a cup of coffee.
Yep, the orange is barely orange anymore on the cat. And of course, these aren't going to work. It's just a relic.
Proceeds from the sale of these phones will save real cats' lives.
In the arms of the angel. So I'm doing that part, the backing part.
Nice.
Yeah. You did the narration. We did it.
Give nice till job. It helps. In an emailed media statement, Apple Senior Vice President of Hardware Engineering Dan Riccio announced that Apple is canceling the AirPower wireless charging mat. Scott, our long national hopes have been dashed. Riccio cited failure to achieve high standards. AirPower was originally announced back in September 2017. Most of the speculation on the cancellation is that Apple could make the pad work, technically, that it did work and it charged your watch and your phone and your AirPods all at the same time. But there are some people saying it just ran too hot. They couldn't get the overheating problem down. Other people said, no, it was wireless interference. It worked fine, but they couldn't get the wireless interference within FCC specifications to get certified. Some people say it's both. AirPower was using multiple coils to charge the devices because they don't all use Qi charging. And that's why it's a typical Apple problem. Like if you just put Qi charging in all your devices, then you could just use Qi charging, which is what you use for the iPhone. They needed to create this complex system and they couldn't make it work.
I noticed on Amazon there are large format pads that will do multiple Qi enabled devices.
Yeah, multiple Qi enabled, but the Apple Watch is not Qi.
Right. It's some other thing.
So that's why when you see the pads that will charge the Apple Watch and an iPhone, they will often only charge the Apple Watch on one side, or they have like a little thing that you put the Apple Watch on and it's separate from the pad.
Yeah. And I noticed that the ones I was looking at were like, they were touting, hey, are you a couple and you both have phones at night that need charging?
Yeah, right. Any Qi charger will work with your iPhone.
Yeah. So that's kind of on them for now.
Spelled Qi.
Why did they? Oh, shoot. I spilled some. Hold on a second. Tom, I'm really losing it today.
Qi, Scott.
Watch on the air. You're going to watch me. I just happen to have some Bounty here. We're just going to lay this out. Dr.
Pepper. This is the
quicker
picker-upper. What'd you spill?
A Dr. Pepper all over my keyboard and a few other areas.
Was it hot?
Here. No. It's not hot. It's
all over your keyboard?
Yeah,
oh, I didn't catch that part.
I shouldn't say all over it. I got a number of keys in the upper left quadrant. I feel like we're going to learn something from this, so I'm happy to expose myself.
Did you get your WASD keys? That's what's important.
No, I got my escape F1, F2, and it looks like the one key may have taken a little bit of a hit.
Okay, that's a tough one.
But this, and it's also one of these wireless keyboards, so I can't just throw this in the dishwasher, you know. Okay.
Right.
I think we're good. Yeah. I think everything's fine.
All right.
We're back, everybody.
Well, the show never ends. You know why, folks.
It very well could happen that way. All right. Anyway, back to what we were saying. Way to go, Apple. Announce the thing before you got it figured out. I don't know if that was the brightest idea.
You know, sometimes they do this because they're like, hey, we're pretty confident the engineering team's going to get this all nailed down. So this gives us a little motivation to get it all worked out.
Yeah.
And this time they gambled and lost. They've done it before and won. So.
I also guess I kind of appreciate the fact that they would come out directly and say, this isn't happening now. Because there have been other products at Apple where they just, and other companies, where they just don't say anything. Like it just goes off into nowhere. Yeah.
still waiting.
They're still waiting for the dance studio in World of Warcraft, for heaven's sake. They've never really addressed it. So I have reasons to complain. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fine.
But yeah, I mean, this one fascinates me because even my co-host on Daily Tech News Show, Sarah Lane, she's like, I'm so bummed. I'm like, why? She's like, I don't know. I just wanted it. It looked cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with her. I was going to get one. I have the three items in question, although it would have taken a new case for the AirPods. That was a thing that didn't have built into it.
That's true.
But I was willing to maybe go that far if it delivered, and it sounds like it just couldn't deliver internally. So, hey, no harm, no foul. I didn't spend any money on it.
This is the silly thing. It's the AirPods, I think, are also the new wireless AirPod charging case, I think, is Qi.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
So you can put your iPhone or your AirPods on a Qi charger, and if it's big enough, you could probably put them both, but not the watch.
Maybe.
The watch is what...
Here's my tinfoil hat theory.
All right.
There are a ton of these available on Amazon from Chinese manufacturers of varying qualities that do bigger format, like put multiple things on there, as long as mm-hmm. they're Qi enabled. Maybe Apple just had a broader view of this and went, well, why are we making this accessory that we would normally have someone else make? In other words, they not have them make, but somebody else is going to make these anyway. Do we really need to be?
But they're not making what AirPower was going to do is say, you won't have to decide where to put it.
Mm-hmm.
You can put the watch or the phone, either one. Just
right.
toss it down.
Just throw it down at the end of
the
day.
They have this 3D coil system, and nobody's making that because it can't be done.
Yeah.
Apparently.
All right. Fair enough. Apple, maybe one day you'll figure it out, but today... It's not that day.
It's not that day. Mm-hmm. Scientists building a helicopter that will be part of the Mars 2020 rover tested it in Martian-like conditions at the JPL Space Simulator. The Martian atmosphere, if you haven't ever been, is 1% as dense as Earth's. So it's kind of like being 100,000 feet up here on Earth.
Okay.
It's that the atmosphere on the ground at Mars is that thin. So to test it, the team injected CO2 into a 25-foot-wide vacuum cylinder, that is the space simulator, after removing all the rest of the oxygen, nitrogen, argon, other gases. A motorized lanyard then sort of tugged at the helicopter to simulate the fact that Mars has two-thirds Earth gravity, you know, just trying to make it a little lighter.
Mm-hmm.
Helicopter successfully flew for 1 minute at an altitude of 2 inches in the thin atmosphere twice on two separate days. The rover and the helicopter are expected to arrive on Mars February 2021.
That's pretty cool. Our Mars stuff just gets cooler and cooler, in my opinion. I love this stuff. What do you think will come out of it, though? Like, what do you think the point
will be? Well, we had Rob DeMillo, CTO of Nimble Collective, on the show DTNS on Friday. And Rob used to work at JPL.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a former pilot. I was like, oh, I guess, you know, a minute at 2 inches. You just want to know, like, does it get lift? Yes, it does. He's like, yeah, but what about other things? He's like, when it gets on Mars, it's not going to be just a quiet space simulator. It's, you know, there's wind. There's mm-hmm. there's dust storms. And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe they tested for that stuff, too. He's like, I really hope they did.
You'd think that they would.
So, yeah, it started making me think, like, what other tests have they done? Oh, I'm sure it's ruggedized and all of that. And obviously, they just won't fly it except in optimal conditions. So we won't be flying this thing all the time. But when it can fly, it's a drone on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So unlike the rovers that we've known in the past, which can only see where they are and then, you know, roll slowly to another place, they didn't get very far. This thing will be able to fly all over Mars. We'll be able to map a little bit.
And we got a strong track record there. We have stuff that we sent up there with a much lower life expectancy than some of those rovers and stuff lasted. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of failures, but we've had a lot of, like, exceeds expectations.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Maybe this one will, too.
Research on a 66-million-year-old T-Rex skeleton called Scotty, discovered in Canada back in 1991, suggests that the dinosaur had a living weight of 8,800 kilograms.
Whoa.
That's close to the weight of the current largest animal alive, the African bush elephant, which is around 9,000 kilograms. Scotty, the dinosaur, is the oldest T-Rex skeleton yet discovered and is estimated to have been about 30 years old when he died. The previous largest T-Rex was called Sue. She was found in South Dakota in 1990. Sue weighed around 400 kilograms less than Scotty.
That's a big difference. That's a giant dinosaur.
So headlines are biggest dinosaur ever found.
Well, biggest T-Rex, right? Because technically the
biggest T-Rex.
Yeah,
T-Rex,
yeah. Right. Did they? I always hope when they find new specimens that they will find proof of all these theories they've had recently about feathers and color and stuff.
Well, they have.
Have they? Like with this
one,
I
mean. Well, the color thing is less definitive, but the feather things, they absolutely that's not even in, that's not a controversy. That's just.
Right. But when I see like a movie representation where they're all like all these fantastic like bird colors, I want that to be true. And I don't know what they're basing.
Yeah. I wonder how you nail that down.
Yeah. I have no idea. I don't know how you can check for a pigment that's that old.
Right. Right.
How you'd have to
I wonder if you either find DNA preserved that you could then sort of guess what the color it would have encoded for was, or or deduce like based on, I don't know, the colors it was hiding in, if it was prey.
Right. And did some of them change based on a condition, like if they're if their hackles are up and there's something around that's going to get them, do they change and they go camouflage, or they change to a scary color so they can be the aggressor? Like all of that stuff's, for whatever reason, now interests me. When I was a kid, I was just like, dinosaurs, don't care what it's about. It just has dinosaurs in it.
They're just big lizards. And now
all
of the kids' books we had as kids that had dinosaurs, wrong.
They were wrong. Doesn't that bug you just a little? I mean, science
is not what dinosaurs look like.
Science evolves and it changes, and I'm totally cool with that. But part of me is a little bummed that stuff's all wrong, you know? Even Jurassic Park's kind of wrong.
My kids' books told me.
A Golden Book by Tom Merritt.
Yes, I'm going to create this Golden Book.
Please do.
We're going to find out that dinosaurs didn't even have feathers. They were actually Transformers. Oh, I don't know.
They were Dinobots all along.
They were Dinobots the whole time.
I knew it. Finally, truth comes out.
So Scotty is larger than anybody expected. Nice. Scotty is also like he's not the most complete T-Rex skeleton, but it's not like they just had a femur and they're sort of extrapolating the rest of him. Like they had a large amount of Scotty. That's one of the reasons it took so long to reassemble him and study him and figure out how much he weighed.
I always wanted to go. There's digs all the time in parts of my state, where you can go and see digs in mid dig or whatever in southern Utah. Mm. I always wanted to go and observe. I wonder if I can just do that. You think I can just get on the phone and go, hey, university, whatever, I hear you guys are.
Yeah, you can. In fact, you for a lot of digs, they'll even train you up to assist, because the actual people with archaeological degrees don't want to do all the grunt work.
Yeah, they don't want to sit there and dust the bones and stuff.
Some of the digging. And then by digging, it means taking a very small brush and like.
Yeah.
Slowly wiping dust away.
I find that super. I mean, maybe I'd hate it after one or two jobs, but it just sounds so cool to me. I would love.
You know, my nephew is getting his degree in archaeology.
Oh,
he could maybe hook you up. I could ask him. He's studying in Australia though, so
he could be. He got married there, right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Right. And you went down there. He could be Captain Picard, proto Captain Picard. Remember, he was all archaeology'd up.
Right.
In the future.
Right, because Vash.
Vash. His crappy girlfriend, Vash, who screwed him over like multiple times.
All the time. Yeah. Like, she those
sucked.
Two.
Yeah.
Get a room.
She was bad.
And then protect your wallet, because she'll steal it.
Yep. And then Q will show up and talk her into being a Q or whatever. Like, didn't they end that with her being, she was a Q from then on. Because
that sounds right. Yeah,
because didn't Q come along and go, hey, I think your girlfriend's kind of hot.
Oh, I'm going to steal your girlfriend.
Yeah.
And Picard's like, great, take her.
You could never, dude. All right, well, this Star Trek offshoot was brought to you by our next story.
Anonymous parts suppliers and software developers tell the Wall Street Journal that Nintendo is planning two new Switch consoles for later this year. One will be targeted at avid video gamers, but still less powerful than, say, your old PS4 Pro or your Xbox One X. The other would be a cheaper model that will lose features like vibration that supposedly would be marketed as a successor to the Nintendo 3DS. The report claims both will be announced at E3, possibly released in time for the holiday shopping season. Now, when I mentioned this one on DTNS, I said Nintendo doesn't usually refresh its consoles, to which 1.5 million people pointed out that they refresh the 3DS all the time.
Yeah.
And I was guilty of thinking everyone knew I meant GameCube, Wii, Wii U when I said that.
Yeah.
Yes, granted, the Nintendo Switch does straddle the line, so maybe that's less surprising, but I still think it's significant that their main home console, the Switch, is also kind of part 3DS in more than one way, getting a refresh and also getting a refresh that would be marketed as sort of the successor to the 3DS.
I think that I could be wrong about this, but I'll bet Nintendo is surprised at how many people use that device as a portable only device. That's how I use it. I never plug it into a TV. It's just always portable. I play it all the time
and
I love it, but I think there's a fair share of people that are doing that and are doing that in favor of a 3DS, which would have been the thing previous to this that they would have used for their portable gaming. So they do have to bridge that gap at some point, and it sounds like this might be it. I'm a little torn. Like, if they come out and say, well, here's the more expensive successor to the home thing, and here's the portable, I have lots of questions about, does the portable have removable controllers? If it doesn't, that's okay with me, but can I still plug it into a TV just with a loose cable? USB-C to...
I would be fine with the portable saying we're dropping HDMI out.
Yeah.
We're dropping vibration, apparently, according to this rumor.
Right.
Fine. That's okay.
That's fine.
Maybe even the controllers aren't removable anymore, although I think that breaks a lot of games. So you kind of have to have it do that. Yeah. We're going to make it a little slimmer, a little cheaper.
Sure.
And the avid video gamer model is like, oh, where this one's going to be 4K output. It's going to have a higher resolution built-in screen, you know, stuff like that. I'm fine with that because it gives you the choice of, like, do you want this one to still be kind of mobile but more geared for your home? Then buy this one. Or if you're like, no, I just want it for mobile, I don't even care if it ever plugs into a TV, then get that
one. The problem I can see, the conflict that could arise, is them splitting the software base. If the more expensive one is truly more powerful, if it's not, well, it very well could just be...
That's the problem, right? It's like... They can't do that.
No.
So how do they make this targeted at avid video gamers? Obviously, it's not going to be like the PS4 Pro or the Xbox One X, so maybe my 4K thing is even out.
Right.
But yeah, you've got to make it so that the same video game plays the same way on all the versions.
Yeah, or if you don't, you're asking for people to split their development.
I just can't imagine they would do that.
I can't either. I think that's a...
Not Nintendo.
Okay, the one way they could do it is the home... Or the docked version of the expensive one, the dock itself has accelerated hardware stuff in it for just resolution, for just HDR. Like, it's possible.
Right. And I guess Stoic Squirrel's pointing out they can support 4K already on some games. So, okay, that's fine.
That's true. I mean, the truth is that device could support 4K right now if there was a game written to do it. But the guts of that thing aren't that powerful. It's still awesome, though, like, in terms of what it is pushing and doing, and it's what it serves as is an amazing part of the current gaming culture, and it's awesome and it should stay. But I just have little worries about them splitting their base, and I don't know. We'll see. I'm thirsty for all of it, though. I can't wait to hear what they do. And Wall Street Journal, by the way, has a record of getting this stuff right with Nintendo specifically. They always call it. I don't know who they got. They've got somebody on the inside over there at the WSJ, but they'll probably
right, they've got a pretty good track record on this stuff. Also interesting that they're saying it'll be announced at E3. No, it won't. It'll be announced on Nintendo Direct during 3D, through E3, right?
E3, like, yeah, that's how they'll do
Microsoft's
it.
The only one announcing anything at E3.
E3's the only, Microsoft's the only one doing it. They're going to focus on xCloud. Google's going to be there, but they're not doing a full keynote as far as I know.
Yeah, and Sony's not doing it.
Sony's out. So, I mean, maybe, I don't know. Nintendo decided years ago that this was better for them, and I think it was probably a decent move. But now I'm actually more interested in that than I am either the other two conferences or whatever equivalent we're going to get. Because I just, I love that thing. And we were talking about with Patrick for MGVB, or MVGB.
Monthly Video Game Briefing.
Yeah, that one. I was talking this morning as we recorded. This idea that PC gamers typically have always been, I don't want a console. I have my PC. I got the more powerful thing and it's better. And there's always been that kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. I've noticed in the last 3 or 4 years a move to being PC Switch people.
Yeah.
And not anything else.
They seem to be.
Yeah. But they seem to be like, I don't know if it's because there's so many cool indies on that thing, if it's just the perfect antithesis to their normal PC gaming habits.
I think it's because it doesn't really overlap.
Yeah.
Right? Like an Xbox, really overlaps with a PC. It feels like a thing you would make a choice about. Well, right. I'm gonna game on the Xbox or I'm gonna game on the PC because they're so close. Whereas the Switch feels like it's totally different.
Yeah.
It's almost a 3DS, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
You know, so I can afford it, it's cheaper, and I can play some games that I won't be able to play on my PC, and all the serious games I'll play on my PC.
Yep. Well, we'll see what Nintendo does. Could be a big play. But stories like this are interesting, and they're partly interesting because our listeners submit them. Tom, who helped submit some of our subreddited articles today?
Yes, big thanks to Bruins 00, Jeff Rose, Very Understated, and Wayne Something, who I always imagine is Wayne Rogers, for submitting stories at currentgeek.reddit.com. And thanks to everybody who voted on those stories and let us know which ones you were more interested in.
I'm going to think of him as Wayne the Brain. How about that?
Mm.
Well, speaking of brains, if you've got one, and I know you do, that means you know how to use a computer. So what I want you to do is go to patreon.com/currentgeek and read through it and say, man, is this a show and the kind of content that I want to support financially with like a dollar or something like that? And the answer will come to you, but I'll let you decide what that answer is. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm just going to tell you that if you're looking to support the show, there's a way to do it. Patreon.com/currentgeek. And if you head over there and do it now, you'll be happy. And so will we. And thank you to everybody who already does.
Absolutely. Your dollars help us to experiment with new segments like this one that I'm going to try out on Scott right now without ever having told him I was going to do it.
Oh, my gosh.
This new segment is called Keep On Roland, where Tom reads a passage from French literary critic Roland Barthes' seminal work, Mythologies.
Whoa.
And Scott reacts.
Okay, hold on. I got music for it.
All right, are you ready,
right,
Scott,
I'm ready.
For your passage from Roland Barthes' Mythologies?
Go for it.
Semiology has taught us that myth has the task of giving an historical intention a natural justification and making contingency appear eternal. Now, this process is exactly that of bourgeois ideology. If our society is objectively the privileged field of mythical significations, it is because formally, myth is the most appropriate instrument for the ideological inversion which defines the society. At all the levels of human communication, myth operates the inversion of antiphysis into pseudophysis.
Whoa. I'm changed. I don't know about you, but I feel
So what do you think?
I didn't even know what to
say. Of Roland's premise there.
I think it's probably worth a second read and a careful consideration because a lot of it went right over my head. So next time I'm going to just put my hand up here and catch whatever I can. But yeah, I'll buy it. My summation, my TLDR on that is mythology is cool and you should know how it's juxtaposed to reality.
Yeah, I think that is a fair, if bourgeois, reaction.
Ah, okay. I was going to ask how bourgeois my reaction was, and apparently
I'd say 6 out of 10.
Yeah. That guy must have been a riot at parties, by the way. Must have just been.
That's our new segment, Keep On Rolling.
Well done, everybody. Oh, wait. I'm not cued for this. Okay. Yeah, there it is.
How ugly the thing says. He's myth taken.
He's myth taken. That's a good title. You should put it in the title suggestions, everybody.
Yeah, I will.
All
good
right.
Good job.
Let's do one of these. Wait. Oh, now I'm all jacked up. Here we go.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Forecast used to be a show. It became a segment here on Current Geek, and what lives today is a way for us to predict the future in various ways. Tom often has amazing, brilliant, sort of thoughtful future guesses. Mine's not so much that, but I think it's okay. So here it is. I'm going to tell you mine. There will come a day, long time from now probably, but there will come a day where they'll scan your brain and offload. What you'll end up doing is offloading everything you've ever typed or said verbally. Maybe you could have the option of everything you've ever thought too, but we don't have to go that far. But everything that's ever been output, so out of your mouth or out of your fingertips into a typed thing or dictated or somehow otherwise transferred from your brain to someone else's ears or something. And this log file, which is now scanned and downloaded from your brain, will be accessible to you only. So there'll be like hardcore privacy protections in it. And it would be useful in a number of ways. One, it would preserve your legacy super intact. So there'd never be any question about some famous quote you said. We'd have the exact record of it, and it would be highly searchable and a very smart sort of log in terms of trying to track stuff down over a lifetime. But also, it would be a great way to remind yourself of things you're supposed to remember. Or when I'd say a story like, oh, yeah, I remember when I was 20, I set fire to the government, the DMV. Oh, it was a real riot and blah, 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 blah. Now I can actually go back and look at the actual story as it was told then and see what inconsistencies I've created over the last 30 years or whatever. So that's my thinking. A giant log file. And it would be preserved forever. And you could decide who had access to it and what they had access to pretty easily. So the Tom Merritt log file would exist in perpetuity where people could tap into what you say was okay and say, ah, Tom Merritt's just endless tech show where everything that ever came out of your mouth for DTNS is preserved. And everything you ever said about movies is preserved. And everything you ever said about anything is preserved. And that would be like a cool thing, I think. What do you think of that?
So when I first heard you mention this, I was thinking like a keylogger for your brain, right?
Yeah.
Like the idea is that there's like spyware in your brain.
Okay.
That is just recording everything,
mm-hmm.
right? And it could be hooked up to your speech center and your motor center so that it knows what characters you're meaning to type, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It could actually record that attention as well as what phonemes you're saying that you're sending to your speech center to say. So it's, you know, it's conceivable.
Because in theory,
this could be done.
The theory is that all of that is being stored, but it's possible it's not.
Well, you know? It's actually quite debatable whether we actually store anything,
right.
to be honest. There's not a lot of evidence that we store memories at near the fidelity that people imagine we might. But if there was a way, if we figure out how to read the speech center and the motor center at better resolution than we do now, which is certainly conceivable,
mm-hmm.
Then we could be able to just store it all, right? You'd have mm-hmm. just a little, you know, a little storage, and storage density is getting bigger and bigger. So yeah, you could do a keylogger in your brain that would do this. I was immediately headed towards, and young married couples will use it constantly to prove what they said to each other when they're having arguments.
I didn't think
whereas you went much more high concept of like, oh, and it'll be like your papers being preserved in a library for people to peruse in the future.
Yeah, I never think of it those. That's what's so fun about forecast actually, because a lot of times we'll think of stuff that seems, wow, that would be a huge benefit to humanity or whatever, but we're not thinking about all the like. Fallout.
Never said your mother looked like a duck. Oh, really? How about let's check your log file?
Yeah. Isn't there there's actually a Black Mirror episode that does this, I think. Now that I think about it.
Yeah, there is the thing where you can rewind your memories.
Yeah.
And then
or except it's
other.
Not
You're
their memories.
Right.
It's more like what they're seeing in their eyes is being recorded. So it's more like actual film.
Yeah.
So not inner thoughts or anything, but like what you're actually seeing and hearing and saying. But
yeah, this is a spin on that by saying this would be actually your thoughts and words and not your deeds.
Boy, imagine that in politics. Imagine that in marriages that are...
I mean, we've almost got that in politics.
We're just about there. We're getting there. Yeah. I mean, we're getting to the point where... Well, certainly we have recorded information that people say incorrectly, and then later we'll say they didn't. But then what we don't have is that immediate like, oh, yeah? And then be able to play it right then for them. That part doesn't exist.
I've had conversations with my sister about like... things our grandpa or grandma used to say, and we'll remember them differently. Like, oh no, what? Or we'll remember like, no, it wasn't grandpa who said that. Grandma always said that. That kind of stuff would be interesting to be like, okay, what exactly did they say?
Yeah. It's like, I thought my dad died when he was 63, and I've thought that since he died in 2000. So now mm-hmm. we're 19, almost 19 years since his death. And all of that time, I was 100% convinced that my dad died at age 63. The other day, I'm sitting around with my mom. We're talking about old stuff, looking at some photos and doing some things. And she says, why do you keep telling everybody dad died when he was 63? He was 64 and a half. He was almost 65. Now, it's just a tiny difference.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was. That's what I thought the whole time.
And but you're she, like, how did I get that in my head? Yeah.
I made her like tell me, okay, well, wait, what's his birthday? And we're like going through all this stuff. And she was right. I was wrong. I just remember it wrong. And I'm sure there's a million of those kinds of things. So what I would like. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, I would like to be able to like, I have like this incredible fond memory of my first kid being born. I want to go back and see if that's like. I want to see it with objective or subjective eyes. I want to be able to go in there and go, oh, all right. I was actually super stressed or I was freaked out yeah, or I was right, this right, or that, right, or I was yeah. happier than I remember. Or, you know, like, cause I feel like that, you know, when you start forgetting all your
you find out you said, oh, we've made a horrible mistake. Why are we doing that?
Yeah. Just don't have my daughter around when I do it. But, but yeah, like that's fascinating to me. Cause I think we pad out our memories in a way that best preserves us, protects us. Maybe preserves and protects
yeah,
people around
that
us.
Yeah, that moment when you walked out of Mad Max Fury Road saying, I guess it was all right.
Oh, that I can guarantee you that didn't happen. I was speechless when I walked out of there. I would like to go back to April of 2015 and do that all over again because I love that. Don't even get me started. Thank you, Australia, for the gift that is George Miller. All right, moving on. Oh, this is fun. We like this. It's the best thing of all time this week. And Tom, tell me yours. What is it?
The thing that I enjoyed is a podcast that I love that had a long break between its episodes and it came back strong with an episode about 70s television shows. This is Best Episode Ever at bestepisodeever.com with Dave, Greg, and Anth. Anthony Marco is the ringleader and... They each talk about an old and often obscure either star or show, mostly shows because it's best episode ever from olden times. So if you didn't know about the mystery show McMillan and Wife or if you'd forgotten about the John Davidson show or if you'd never heard of the action adventure blaxploitation series Get Christy Love, well, check out Best Episode Ever and you can get up to speed on all three of those.
Oh, yeah. Look at all these. Let's see. Oh, wow. Best, the space emperor who drank too much. What the heck is that?
Oh, you're going back into previous
yeah, old episodes. Right? Yeah. Like there's some great looking stuff in here. McMillan and Kristen and John. Wow. All right. It sounds like my kind of show. I didn't even know about this. We got to share our list more often.
Good stuff. And these guys have been podcasting together for a long time. So
nice. I'll have to check it out. Well, for me, it's a much more creature comfort type item. I got this cold, and when I get a cold, I tend to hibernate a little bit, curl up on the couch, read a book, cuddle with the dog, that sort of stuff. And for Christmas, I got a 20-pound weighted blanket from my wife for Christmas, and it was just like this weird thing that was on sale, and we all thought, oh, how weird is that? Oh, it's a big, heavy blanket. How weird.
Is this because you get nervous when fireworks go
off? No, it's not that, although I know that's like a lot of dogs get like the vests and the blankets and stuff. This was, I suppose people probably use it for lots of therapeutic reasons, but for me, it was just comfy. Get on the recliner, cover up in that thing, and read a science fiction book is my idea of the best day ever. I just love it. It sounds amazing right now, just saying it. And
I feel like, I mean, there's something to the idea of pressure relieving anxiety, mm-hmm. like not just in dogs, but in humans.
Sure.
But also like just not having to worry about the blanket coming off of you.
Yeah.
That's always a big thing when I'm cold in the winter. It's like trying to make sure I get in a position where the blanket's not going to creep up and expose my foot and mm-hmm. my foot gets real cold or mm-hmm. something.
Yeah. And it doesn't, it's got glass beads in it. So it has a way of being warm, but
not
too warm.
Oh, so it's not
warm.
Like the lead blanket they give you for x-rays.
No, no. Thank goodness. No. Well, maybe I do want that from the alien rays that we're getting. But anyway, I had this thing on me yesterday because I just thought, hey, it's time to break that thing out and actually use it. Mm-hmm. And man, I got in that couch. The dog nestled up next to me and fell asleep. I read 3 or 4 chapters of Best Served Cold by Joe Abercrombie, a great book. And
great book.
It just melted away the time and just was the most comfortable freaking thing ever. So I am now a big proponent of the weighted blanket. I don't know how heavy they make them, but we got this 20-pounder that's big enough for me.
Well, then you could roll it up and do curls.
Totally. It's so heavy. It's like, it'll be if I leave it somewhere like on the couch and I'm like, hey, somebody go grab my blanket. like at first glance, it just looks like a blanket. But you reach down and grab it, you're like, what the crap?
Maybe don't get it for your 95-year-old grandfather.
Yeah.
Unless you're sure they can lift it.
It's like a wet carpet is how much it weighs. It's crazy.
Like a wet blanket.
Ah, there you went with that. Anyway, it's really rad, and people should get it, and they're on Amazon, and I like them. This is not an ad.
Excellent.
I just like them. All right, quick email.
Yeah, neither of these are ads. These are just things that Scott and I have enjoyed so much that we think they're the best thing of all time this week.
This week, yeah, exactly. And I'm going to totally try that podcast. It sounds great. And they have someone in the chat says they have a very deep catalog, and you're right, they do. They have a lot.
Yeah, they do. And like I said, these guys have been podcasting together for a long time. They know what they're doing. It's fun. They pull some deep references. It's always a good time.
Quick email from a listener, currentgeek@gmail.com, or you can leave us voicemails, 801-471-0462. This one is from Steve. He says, Dear Current Geekers, may I be so bold as to suggest the pilot of Greatest American Hero? All three seasons are on Prime. He says are free on Prime, but you have to have a Prime subscription to get them. But yes, available now, Greatest American Hero.
Look at what's happened to you.
Mm.
Suggesting Greatest American Hero.
Look what's happened to you.
I'm checking right now in the official autopilot doc, and it does not appear, although I know we've talked about it. Scott.
Guarantee we've talked about it. I don't know in what context.
It does not appear that we ever have done Greatest American Hero. So
maybe we sneak that one in there.
I'm adding it to the list as we speak, live. On the show, right above Farscape, which will actually be the next autopilot.
Yes, we already have
Greatest
Farscape locked
American
in.
American Hero is going in the list.
All right.
Actually, I can delete some of these Faulty Towers and Ashes of Love. We already did those. Love American Style. Yeah.
Yeah. All those are, you can mark those off. Dude, what's in I Spy is in this. I can't think of his name. Not Bill Cosby, but the other guy. Forgot his name.
In Greatest American Hero?
Yeah. He's like the...
Well, we're starting to get a long list of possibles here. This is good.
Yeah, we love it. And we're getting a lot of them from you guys. So thanks for the email and send your own in. If you want to, you have some old show or some cool show or obscure thing that everybody missed you think is worth checking out, when we do our autopilot episodes, let us know. currentgeek@gmail.com.
Be so bold.
Be so bold. Also, stick around for the end of the show because Legal Geek is here with reviews on how Miller Coors is suing Anheuser-Busch over the medieval beer corn syrup ads for false advertising. Enjoy. Beer
dilly
drinkers.
Dilly.
Yeah. That sounds fascinating. It always is from Legal Geek. So stick around. That's happening right after we're done here. Next week, the Current Geek Film Festival continues with It Happened One Night. From 1934.
The original rom-com.
Yeah.
Okay, there were rom-coms before it, but this is like the oldest like hit rom-com.
Yes, and it's the... I've not seen it, but I hear people say it's the template for what rom-coms would build from forever.
If you're like, what's the formula? This is the one that created the formula that lasted... And actually, Scott and I will assess, is it still the formula, or has it evolved much since 1934? I've never seen this either. This will be a fun one where both of us will be coming in blank.
Yep. It's an old one. It's
blank? Is blank the right word?
Coming in
we'll
blank.
Be coming in.
Coming in blind.
Tabula rasa.
Blind? No.
Coming in unfettered by bias.
There, you got it.
Preconceptions.
You nailed it. And by then, I'll bet my desk will be super sticky. And
Roland Barth would be pleased with that.
Exactly. Phrase. Well, it's already kind of tacky where I spilled this. Oh, well. Anyway, hey, that'll be great. So come back.
Your fingers won't slip off your keys.
Come back. Hey, look, I know you're always trying to look on the bright side, but this one maybe not. Oh, you know what? That key's working fine. Yeah, everything's fine. We're good.
See, I tried to tell you.
Everything's fine here. Tom was right. I was wrong. That's it for the show. Thank you all for joining us. Oh, Tom Merritt, anything happening you want to let people know about before we go?
There's a few things happening, I guess. One is Free Tom Newsletter, freetomnewsletter.com. It is not meant to free me from anything. It is meant to be free to you if you're like, when's Tom going to write a new book? What did he talk about on Sword and Laser this week? What are all those silly podcasts he does, and when does he do them? It's all packed in there every week, all the stuff I do with some funny gifts and a commentary to boot. It's all in there every week. Sign up right now, freetomnewsletter.com.
Okay, that's an awesome idea. Also, if you didn't know we were doing this, there is an official podcast on the Frog Pants Network where we played Dungeons & Dragons, and it's a blast. It's called There Will Be Dungeons at therewillbedungeons.com. If you're into such things and you want to see a bunch of wackadoos do some role play and some fun gameplay, do check it out. We just finished our first year. We're about to launch into our second campaign with these characters. They all survived the first year, some by the hair of their teeth. We're really excited to keep moving with that. If you have any interest in Dungeons, Dragons, and or Dragons, go check it out over there. We're playing 5th edition rules in a unique world we built ourselves at therewillbedungeons.com. And I think you'll probably like it. For everything else, go to currentgeek.com. Of course, frogpants.com will get you there as well. We're on Twitter, Current Geek, Scott Johnson, Ace Detect. And our Reddit page is currentgeek.reddit.com. That's going to do it for me, for Tom, for all of you. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we covered the latest developments in how the Bud Light medieval ad campaign, and its very strange turn as of the Super Bowl, has led the biggest beer makers in the U.S. to a court battle with one another over corn syrup, of all things. During the Super Bowl, Anheuser-Busch launched a new campaign with a 60-second ad showing their medieval king marching casks of corn syrup to the castles of competitors Coors Light and Miller Lite. This ad, and the many that have followed in the weeks since, continually make the point that Bud Light is not made or brewed with corn syrup. Who knew we consumers cared one iota about what was in our mass-market beer? Regardless, Miller Coors, which brews and sells both these other varieties of beer, has sued Anheuser for allegedly violating federal false advertising laws. But here's the fascinating part of the case. Everything in the Bud Light ads is technically true. It is true that Miller Coors uses corn syrup as a fermentation aid during brewing, but this corn syrup is consumed by the yeast in the process, and thus is not present anymore in the final product. Miller Coors does not dispute this fact. So how could there be false advertising claims? Well, the federal law is more complicated than just dealing with the truth.
You can't handle the truth!
The Lanham Act, which governs false advertising, has been interpreted by courts in prior decisions to prohibit false statements as well as literally true statements that nonetheless mislead or confuse consumers. Courts have also ruled that indirect statements can be proven false by necessary implications drawn from the broader context of the ad. So according to Miller Coors, even though Anheuser has been careful not to say that the final beer products, Miller Lite and Coors Light, contain corn syrup, the implication is that this sweetener is in the final product, or even worse, that the much maligned high fructose corn syrup is in these beers when bottled and sold on store shelves. Proving false advertisement under such theories is complicated and relies heavily on actual evidence from consumers about being misled or confused. Given the technical sophistication of your average mass-market beer drinker consumer, it might be possible for Miller Coors to produce such evidence. But this is no slam dunk, and it could be a long and costly court battle between these brewing giants. What will happen much sooner is a judge ruling on Miller Coors' request for a preliminary injunction on the corn syrup ad campaign. When dealing with negative claims about competitors and ads, federal judges often defer to the potential harm that can be done, and that makes it more likely that an injunction will be granted, which would pull those Bud Light ads off the air until the case is finally resolved. Perhaps corn syrup will finally be the end of the dilly-dilly ad chain stemming back years. The bottom line is, false advertising under federal U.S. law is more complicated than one might think, because just like branding laws generally, the goal is to avoid consumer confusion and misleading in any manner. So while Anheuser has taken great pains to avoid false statements in these corn syrup ads, they still may fall afoul of the law, which would be enough to make all the mountains turn blue. Dilly dilly indeed. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
Wait, is Boris the one who took a poop on stage?